Today, I'd like to get myself into hot water. I want to talk about Donald Trump and AIPAC. I want to talk about what we can learn from shame and who we ought to be and work at as a society to combat some of the forces in society. But before I do any of that, I have to tell you about Purim. We had a wonderful Mexican theme this year, great food, lovely decor, much fun had by all, appropriate for Purim. As part of those celebrations, we, Cantor, I should really say, ordered a hamantaschen, where is she? In a, excuse me, a pinata in the shape of a hamantaschen, little three angle. And one of my job duties, which was not negotiated in my contract, by the way, was that I was to break open the pinata. We were concerned if a bunch of kids had bats that we might have fewer bar mitzvahs in the years to come. So I was given a little for stinking stick about this big. And the pinata is about this big. And it is made from really very hard paper mache, somewhere about 20 on the Rockwell hardness scale, if you know what that is. So I begin to whack the pinata with this little stick, and nothing is happening. And there are little kids around who will quickly become bored. And bored kids create great mischief. So I realize I got to get this thing open somehow. And I call up my sort of inner hamantaschen pinata warrior. And I begin to whack this thing with tremendous force and vehemence. And I'm going, oh, and I'm screaming at the thing as I slowly but surely break it open. The candy falls out, and there's order and kindness in the world again. Jason Kaufman takes me aside a few minutes later and said, boy, Rabbi, you got a lot of anger there. You must have gotten out the first 6 months of aggression from working for us in that one pinata. The truth of the matter is that we all have anger inside of us, and the question is always, how do we use it, how do we motivate it, and can we remain in control of it? And certainly while I was ripping that pinata open, I was proud of myself because I was able to remember that my antics were partly that, to entertain the kids on Purim, even as I hacked that thing to a nasty and quick death. But we also all know when our baser emotions can get ahead of us and control us. And that's why I want to talk about Donald Trump and AIPAC and a number of my rabbinic colleagues. Doesn't matter, by the way, whether you are a Trump supporter or not, there are deeper issues at play here as it shall come. But I think we all know that Donald Trump's candidacy for the presidency has created tremendous polarization in an already polarized nation. And the responses to his candidacy have been, at times, almost as vitriolic as some of the language choices that Mr. Trump himself uses. As he was invited to speak at AIPAC, the great Jewish lobbying organization, and all candidates, by the way, are invited to speak at AIPAC, the blogosphere and the rabbinic channels, particularly those who were attending, went a little bit wild. How should we respond to Donald Trump's appearance? There were people who thought they should boycott. There were others who said, we'll wait till he gets up and then we'll stand up and walk out in protest. One Orthodox rabbi got up and actually screamed about Donald Trump's hatred and then left, and when interviewed said, I did it for my kids. I didn't think it would change anything. Others sat there quietly. A colleague of mine, Stuart Weinblatt, spoke, though, of how civil everyone was beforehand when discussing what response was the appropriate response. And pretty much what he found was people were saying, you have to do what you think is right. And there was tremendous acceptance that people could respond to this speaking occasion in different ways. People remained respectful. And I think that Stuart brings up something very lovely and true and appropriate, but I want to go a little bit further than he does with the respect that was shown there. Because a number of weeks back, we revisited the concept that people get the government that they deserve. And I'd like to say that we get the candidates we deserve also as a nation. But I want to go farther as we begin to explore this subject of shame as it appears in a 14th century work, The Paths of Righteousness, in a section of the book called The Gates of Shame, and in the Maora e Naim, a comment by Menachem Mendel of Chernobyl in the 18th century. What they both talk about, by the way, is that shame and intelligence always go hand in hand. You can't find shame without intelligence, and you can't find intelligence without shame. And for those into Eastern philosophies, I'm happy to discuss shame on that aspect at another later point. But I think what is at the heart of shame is that it requires us to have a notion of the self and of others, of society and society's expectations, and of our actions and how close or distant our actions are from the expectations we have of our own self and that society has of us. In other words, shame is a dialogue that occurs between us and our souls and ourselves and the larger community. And that's why the tradition teaches that shame and intelligence go hand in hand. We actually have data, by the way, that people, it's always exceptions, so I'm not saying this to anyone who may have lost a job, but very often on a statistical level, people who've lost their job when asked often couldn't see it coming, aren't able to gauge their own performance, whereas many people who keep their own job do so because they hear the wolf at the door and they are responding, sometimes with a little more anxiety than needed, but they're responding to the environment, they're reading it, and they're trying to adjust their actions to meet society's expectations. Finally, the Maora e Naim teaches us that shame is ultimately a tool that can lead us back to God, that it is the tool of consciousness by which we should become aware of how we are failing and not living up to our own greatest capacities. It's a beautiful notion of shame. I think we tend to try to shuffle it off to the side, right? Shame is not a fun emotion. So why did I bring all of this notion of shame up? Because I think in addition to the anger in this election cycle and the venomous types of speech that we're hearing, this is a moment of national shame. Because a nation does get the candidates it deserves. And I think that over the last 40 years, our ability to walk together, to talk together, to develop legislation together, has gone through a very slow decline and breaking it apart. And it's a little bit like that wonderful story we all know about the frog who's put in a pot of cold water, and the water is begun to be heated. And the frog, because the change is so subtle, doesn't notice that the temperature around it is getting hotter and hotter and more dangerous until it is a little bit too late. And I think that we as a nation are in hot water right now. And the person who woke us up to this, and that we should be grateful to, I think, is Donald Trump. Because for years, there has begun to be a conversation about civility in our nation, in little pockets here and there, but it's never gained a certain level of speed. And Donald Trump, for whatever his reasons, whether it's because this is who he is, whether it's because he understands that we are who we are and that he can act this way because we will positively and acceptingly buy into this sort of discourse, not only coming from him, but from his enemies as well. Donald Trump understood the soul of America and where we have gotten to. He's the one who said, "Hey, frog, the water's pretty hot." And I'd like to think that maybe now at this moment, we're a little bit more awake to how we need to discuss things. So my friends who got up at AIPAC, my friends who've written blogs condemning Mr. Trump, are well-intentioned, but I think sometimes the fancy and elegant language they're using to attack him is actually the same vehemence that we see across the political spectrum, just dressed up in fancy clothes. The truth of it is that if I am correct, and if it took us 40 slow years to deteriorate our connections and our responsibility to one another, there can be no clear fix for the state of America. There will be people who will argue that because it's sexy, because we are a nation of impatience that cannot easily take the long view. But it seems to me that the only way we can begin to correct where we are is to talk to one another, to have conversations, and to relearn the skills that are involved that allow us to speak to people who view the world differently. And I understand that I am in Portland, a place where we have our own little echo chamber of belief, but we have to seek out those who don't think the same, and we have to give them Dan Chol Adam L'Chav Zchut. We have to imagine that there is a reason, a message, a value system that has integrity to it, even when we may not agree with it. And we have to seek those out. We need to be able to have conversations about Israel, which is a very dividing issue in our time. We need to talk about what the public good is. And so what I will be doing over the next number of weeks is turning to one of our Jewish masters in this, the Chofetz Chaim, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan, who wrote the famous book known as the Chofetz Chaim on the laws of Lashon Hara, and also Susan Turkle, who's written a book about conversation as well. Because if we lost the cultural capital over 40 years of how to talk to one another, we're going to have patience and slowly rebuild it. And what the Chofetz Chaim did so masterfully, and it tells us that his society was not so great either, he went deep into all of our Jewish sources, the Talmud, the Midrash, the Mishnah, and pulled out isolated laws and statements and ethical notions around how to talk to others and what not to say. And he brought them into a coherent whole that became this rather long book. And when it came out, not only did it become a sort of a Jewish bestseller, there are a lot of people who thought he was a little bit meshuggah. You think people can actually learn how to talk properly? Because it's not easy. But like that rabbi whacking the pinata, if we can remember and watch ourselves in the midst of our passions, we have the ability to turn down the heat on the pot of water we find ourselves in. We can begin to connect, and we can begin to realize that even the people we may not like can teach us very deep lessons. Because I do believe with all of my heart that nations get the candidates they deserve. And that shame, our national shame, can be a lesson and a teacher to help us become the people and the nation that we want to be, so that the gap between who we are and what we aspire to is shrunk just a little bit. That, to me, seems to be our job at this time, and I hope you'll come back in the weeks to come as we begin to look and study and learn some of this a little bit more. Shabbat shalom.